Good afternoon, and it's time for Ask the Mayor. I'm Adam Ragusa, and Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan is here in the studio with us to answer your questions about city issues and hopefully a few of mine. How are you doing today, Mr. Mayor?
I am well, other than allergy-ridden, and I say that, I think, last month, too. And so for all my fellow allergy sufferers, hang in there.
Believe me, I'm one of them. So, I have to talk on the radio, which
that's
further complicates
exactly.
Things. Yeah, this is speaking of the radio. This is a big week of radio for you, Mr. Mayor. You have been you were on WGCL on Monday, and then you were on WBIW in Bedford yesterday and tomorrow. You're going to be on WCSI in Columbus talking about the Beeline. Why do you think that other communities want to know about the Beeline and what's going on with the Beeline?
I think what's happening with Beeline is that we did the groundbreaking started yesterday. Well, people will actually start to see construction later this week. We had promised it would occur by Memorial Day, and that will happen. And then we'll really see construction in upcoming months and throughout the next year. And we intend to see the line ready, the downtown phase ready to be walked upon for. Within the next year. The message we're trying to take to other communities, especially obviously in the region, is that we want Bloomington to be a regional destination. Mm-hmm. And eventually, as it gets developed, the Bloomington Entertainment and Arts District, BEAD, with all that's already happening in downtown, I certainly don't mean to say that we're waiting for the city to make Bloomington a destination attraction. There's already an awful lot happening, and the opening of hotels certainly in the downtown area helps. The university, of course, is the greatest destination attraction we have. Then you have all the natural resources of the area, and all of those things combined, I think, will make us a magnet for visitors and eventually for those who want to live here or retire in the area. And Beeline is something we think people will be able to partake of in the downtown phase as all the different developments come, the arts opportunities. Then we'll expand it to the entire 3.1-mile trail, and eventually it'll feed into the network of about 14 miles worth of trails. So we can see people making a weekend. Certainly if you have a convention or a conference a week here in town that may not be coming right now.
And, of course, there was a little bit of criticism over the last couple of years about how the project seemed to be taking a while. But let's listen to Parks and Rec Director Mick Reniason and talk about why the process was took as long as it did.
This is a project that's been at least 5 years in the making, from conceptualization under the Fernandez administration to acquiring the property that we are standing on today to designing the first phase of the trail to getting the funding together from NDOT and from the state, Department of Natural Resources. All that takes time, and while some people think it's a long time, 5 years in a project of this nature is actually pretty quick, from conceptualization, property acquisition, trail design, and today marks the beginning of the groundbreaking.
Now, yesterday also marked another beginning, which was that you were able to secure $900,000 for the second phase of the project, right?
Absolutely. And I think Mick very well stated everything that's been happening up till now. And the one big difference with the $900,000 that yesterday the Daniels administration announced statewide grants on their commitment to trails. This is money from the Department of Natural Resources. That $900,000 will not have with it the same strings attached that Mick is discussing in the first go-round that we've had. A lot of people, and I think a lot of this had to do with the fact it was during a campaign that people would refer to it as a delay, and I appreciated in your question how you worded that, because you can either look at it as delay or you can say, you know, what's taking so long and what the process is, and Mick explained very succinctly what all's been with it. And we obviously don't want to criticize any those who've been giving us the funding, but there are a lot of strings that come attached with the grant that came through the state initially. This second phase, I think because we've built up enough trust with the state, we'll be able to utilize that money in developing the second phase of the trail without having to go through a lot of the hurdles. And I think people will see a much faster timeline. The other grant that we received yesterday that I don't want to let go unmentioned was from the local Board of Realtors, who granted us a commitment of $50,000. And that is very significant to us, one, because it's local, too, because it's the first. And I think we're going to start to see other groups, other service groups start to want to – and I think Mick received a question yesterday from a local group wanting to adopt a part of the trail or perhaps an amenity on the trail. And so that was an exciting – obviously, when you have a $900,000 grant announced right on the heels of a $50,000 grant, sometimes the importance of the $50,000 grant might be diminished. And I want to make sure mm-hmm. that people know that your own local Board of Realtors has made that commitment, and I think it will be a catalyst for others.
Well, we've got other callers on the line who want to talk about some other topics. I want to be sure to explore the issue of the Beeline just a little bit more before we move on. I've got the Beeline Trail flyer right in front of me, and it's got a quote from you that says, this is the most significant economic development project on the city's agenda. It's monumental in its scope and importance. And I wonder if you ever worry that using that kind of language that you're inviting an argument that says, well, this is a very nice project, but come on, it's a couple miles of brick pavers. Is it really economic development?
I think the reason any politician ever worries about giving a quote is that it's going to be recorded. No, and I mean that seriously, that, you know, you come back and people look and say, well, this didn't turn out the way. I would not say something that deliberate without an awful lot of confidence. And in this particular case, I do view this as clearly a recreational amenity, something that will promote local health and fitness. At the same time, it's already spurring economic vitality in the downtown. We're already seeing private owners of buildings who are repositioning plans for buildings that they were looking at. We're looking at existing buildings where they're kind of going to be retrofitting so that what is now the rear of a building will be another public entrance, probably some plaza area, building out onto to facing the trail.
Storefronts facing on the trail.
Absolutely. Right, yeah. And so I think we'll start to see more locally owned restaurants and shops. Already we're seeing interest from outside the community. Obviously, that's one of the reasons I'm going out to talk to surrounding communities. And I think we'll start to see some effort made to make sure that people in Indianapolis and even other parts of the state beyond that will know about this. And it's not just about the tourism. It is about investment.
Here's an email question from Steve about the Beeline. And it says, Mr. Mayor, will there be a bike ped bridge over 2nd Street as the Beeline Trail develops? Without such a bridge, it will not be a safe bike ped commuter path. It will instead bring more congestion and cross traffic in front of Kroger's and Wendy's.
Yeah, right now there's as it's planned, there is not one, but it is a topic that's being discussed. We've looked at right now an at-grade crossing. There's discussion of what would it look like physically, what would it look like in terms of cost to have what Steve is talking about in terms of an overpass, if you will, a bridge. There's other discussion of going under the street. The cost is pretty prohibitive. And so right now it's always been planned out, and all the public discussion and all the plans that are online show an at-grade crossing because that's what's currently planned. We'll continue to look at it. Right now it is what it is, but I think there's a very good, very valid question in what Steve's asking.
We're speaking to Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan here on WFIU's Ask the Mayor. You can join the conversation toll-free at 877-285-9348, or a local call in the Bloomington area is 855-0811. You can also send an email to mayor@indiana.edu. And let's go to the phones. We have Stan, who would like to talk about a topic that I was pretty sure was going to come up today.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor.
Greetings.
I fully support the Arts District and
the Bloomington Entertainment and Arts District, also
yes,
known as
BEAT. You know, if you want, I could just cut to the answer.
Well, no.
No, I'm just kidding. I kind of anticipated it, too.
Go ahead, Stan.
My comment is that I think in today's paper there was a note from a person who's on the West Coast who, in effect, says, lighten up, Bloomington. But what puzzles me is this. As astute a politician as you are, why wasn't there more public information before a purple and green ball were installed? Just as a matter of, you know, communications.
Sure, a process.
Well, let's be clear that we flesh this out. The bollards are traffic control devices that have been installed in place of planters on the intersection of Kirkwood and Walnut, right?
Yeah, and I think you ask absolutely. And I appreciate the nature of the question. It is as much about the communication of it as anything, and certainly we're going to see that kind of any kind of thing like that handled differently. We've done a pretty good job in communicating with local businesses on a lot of issues. This is something that that those who are familiar with the corners, and I will say I appreciate what the person from California wrote, because I did think if this was the topic of the week, we were living in a pretty good community. but you still bring up a valid question, and that is the process. The reason those are there, and many people may remember, I'm surprised we weren't having an outcry about what had been there, and that was the planters that had been there for a long time since the Kirkwood Streetscape Project was done. But worse than that is they were really not planters that were there by the time they were removed. They were shattered planters, and they'd been crumbled for a long time. I think an eyesore initially, and then became, I think, a public hazard at some points. The replacement cost on those was in the ballpark of $11,000 each. And the bollards that have been put in now are about $1,100 each. They're stronger. What I think where the message got lost was the fact that this is BEAD, Entertainment Arts District. The colors of BEAD will actually be four, and this is two of them. There are two others that haven't been installed. And there was just no communication on that, and also no familiarity with what the color scheme of BEAD is going to be. Had all the signage, flags, advertising gone out, I think people would have made that identification, but didn't. So in the meantime, what is most important to me is that they are secure, and people have already said, well, trucks are hitting them. Well, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to protect pedestrians, and trucks and cars had been hitting those planters that had been there, and that's why they were shattered. The problem is those planters moved, and then they shattered, and I did not want to put in replacements at the same cost. Ultimately, we need to do a better communication job on anything that's going to kind of alter. If those had just been limestone, just regular color, I don't think we would have heard a word about them.
Stan, was it the colors that were bugging you?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch
Stan, that. Were the colors bothering you?
No, actually, I like them. I think a little bit of eclecticism won't do the downtown any harm at all. And if the colors help people visualize the extent of the arts district, I think color is important, especially come wintertime. I think some people may find those colors cheerful.
Well, I appreciate that, but you're right in your very initial question, and that is it's not so much the color; it's more of the fact that people didn't know they were coming until they were there.
Yeah, yeah, and well, that's what surprised me, because there are always people lying in wait for a gotcha.
Thank you, Stan.
Well, thanks very much for the call, Stan. We appreciate it. You can join the conversation at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348 or email us at mayor@indiana.edu. We're speaking to Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan here on WFIU's Ask the Mayor. Let's go back to the phones. Joe wants to weigh in on the bollards. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to congratulate the city for getting that pair of balls over there on Kirkwood. But I'm wondering if you're not undercutting the whole nature of that intersection. Why not put those balls at the head of the trail? That would be kind of nice as a signifying device for here's where the trail starts by these two colorful balls.
Yeah. Now, again, those.
Why not just take them out and undercut the corner so cars can make the corner and they won't run into it, and you can protect the pedestrians by having them back off.
And you have just hit on the issue.
It's traffic calming, right?
That years ago, a decision was made in the community, and you're right. What is the problem at that intersection isn't what color or whether they're balls or spheres, whatever. It's the cut of the corner. And that was done very intentionally many years ago during the Kirkwood Streetscape plan. And Bicycle Pedestrian Commission and others all weighed in, and the city council and the administration decided this is the way we want to have that intersection go. And if you go back and look at old, I'm not sure it was Herald Times or Herald Telephone then, you'll find that people were very upset about it at the time, that trucks won't be able to make that corner.
Right.
But that was very intentionally mm-hmm. done. So all we have done, we've not changed the angles. We haven't changed the curve. We haven't changed anything about that other than the look. It's under the way in which the city set this up under law many years ago. It's traffic calming. It's actually pedestrian protection. It's to keep people from being hit by trucks or cars that are turning that curve. The easiest solution would be to cut that back and make it a lot easier to turn. And yeah. then we'd have the opposite phone calls coming in is, wait a minute, now trucks, cars are cutting that corner, and it's dangerous for pedestrians at probably one of our busiest intersections for pedestrian traffic. So you have hit on the topic, and it was very consciously decided at the time with all the public input back years ago. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's time to revisit that discussion and see what people think.
Oh, okay. The other thing is, I mentioned putting them at the head of the trail, but I see the topic is a little deeper. But what are you going to have at the head of the trail to signify the start of that trail?
Well, I don't know, and the head of the trail won't be finished in this first phase, but I'm guessing Parks and Recreation already has a plan for that, mm-hmm. and I'm going to have to defer to that. And it may even be on the city's website, bloomington.in.gov, and you can see designs that are done, schematics for the beeline. But I apologize, I don't have the exact answer. I will say that this idea had come up in terms of when some people would like to move those bollards. We're going to have something dividing the trail from every street intersection.
Yeah.
And if those who are familiar with the Clear Creek Trail know that pretty much we've got the metal iron posts painted yellow, and they get hit and bent and dented. And so I think we do want to be careful. I know that they've got more decorative bollards set at the street intersections, but I'm not sure what the trailhead markers are going to be. But that's certainly a good suggestion.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for the call, Joe.
All right, thanks.
We're going to take one more call on the bollards issue, and it's going to be from Mike. Hi, Mike.
Good morning or afternoon.
Afternoon.
This kind of regards the whole streetscape issue on Kirkwood. Mm-hmm. I know you said, many years ago they basically designed that stretch between Walnut and Indiana, mm-hmm. you know, all the brick and stuff. And, you know, that corner is not the only corner that has received all sorts of damage from trucks, skateboarders, and everything else. The crosswalks don't really line up with the sidewalks. I never thought it was the greatest design in the world. But what I wondered was, even though I know you know, people say, okay, it's the entrance to the streetscape, none of the other corners around the square were changed over from what I'll call the, you know, the McCloskey Memorial planners that were put in there that, number one, give pedestrians better refuge, and number two, have never really suffered all the damage, thousands and thousands of dollars, that all this limestone sculpturing has received over its term of existence. And I'm wondering why we can't just put those planters back, basically the pea gravel concrete planters that aren't that ugly, back in there to, you know, basically avoid these issues, and you could put the bead bollards, you know, right up in the planters as well. And I'll just hang up and listen to the answer.
No, I believe me, that is almost exactly what I had initially wanted to do, because you're right. If you look, there are no other intersections suffering from the exact same kind of problem. There's certainly none of those you referred to them as the pea gravel, and that is a great identification for those planters. They don't get shattered because they're cut back so far. I think the answer, simple answer is, or maybe not so simple, is that if we were to do that, first, I think we would need city council approval to redesign that street. And then all the public input would be that if we cut those back, pedestrians aren't as safe there. And I think your very legitimate question is, well, why is a pedestrian at that corner more important than a pedestrian someplace else? I think that's a valid question. My understanding is, as part of the Kirkwood streetscape, my guess is it's because it received a lot more attention because it was part of a specific streetscape project. And I'm sure there are others who will have other opinions, but I'd love to revisit that issue. And the simple solution would be to cut it back, have better signage perhaps. And but I'm guessing there are many, many people who would disagree with what I think is your opinion, my opinion for sure, and would feel that we ought to go the other route, and that is go change all those other intersections so that they mimic the one we're talking about. I know it's a certainly goes counter to what you're talking about, but my guess is that would be the counter proposal.
And we will get in just one more of those thoughts. It's an email from Laura who says, I want to make it clear that not everyone agrees with Stan. I object to the process by which the bollards were placed, and I also think they are hideous, especially their colors. But we'll go ahead and leave the issue there.
Well, she only disagrees with Stan on one point, because he didn't say that he supported the process. Mm-hmm. He was questioning why the process was the way it was. I think the difference is an opinion on taste, and that is always going to be the case. I can't worry too much about that, because we're not going to be able to have a referendum on what you like and what you don't like on everything. But it's important to have the input and to make future decisions.
Steve is on the line, and he'd like to talk about issues of walkability in the city. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Greetings.
Well, the theme today seems to be pedestrians with the bollards and the Beeline Trail. And I want to just make one point. Sometimes these issues are framed as pedestrians versus vehicles. But I would like to point out that pretty much everyone who drives a car will park their car somewhere, get out, and walk. So really, we're all pedestrians, and I think it's very important to make things safe and convenient for pedestrians. And I was just curious if you have any other plans for walkable communities in the future.
Well, that's a good point in terms of who is a pedestrian. There are other plans in terms of other trails that are going on. They don't receive the same kind of attention as the Beeline and the connectivity of all those trails, but also to have Steve, I think you may know that Dan Burton, who is an expert on
walkable communities. Yeah, he is the expert. Yeah.
And I know that Steve has had an interest in this and others, and we are going to – the city of Bloomington is going to bring him back. He's been in town once, and he's going to meet with the planning staff to somewhat of almost a symposium for our planning staff, who are very anxious to hear more of his ideas and very supportive of the concept of bringing him back. And then we'll do some more public discussion on this. So I think in terms of future planning – We're trying to retrofit a city that was built many years ago, and then trying to make things work better for pedestrians, bicyclists. At the same time, we need to be making sure that we're up to date on all the most modern planning in terms of future development. And so we're trying to go both directions at the same time, which is doable, and we are working on.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for the call, Steve. We're going to blaze through a couple of quickies here. Here's an email question from Andy, and it says, what's the status and plans for the McDowell Switchyard?
We continue to negotiate with CSX, who owns that parcel. It's a massive parcel. Altogether, if we were to be able to acquire it, it would be comparable to the size of Bryan Park. I mean, so that gives you a feel for how big this is out there. And we've had environmentals done on it already. And we have to work with CSX in order to acquire the property. The $1 million was set aside by the city council in the last budget. And we certainly hope to be able to use less than that to make the purchase this year. But we're out waiting for CSX's response.
Here's an email from Phil. It says, Dear Mayor Cruzan, as a member of the Pinestone Neighborhood Association, we'd like to thank you and the Hand Department for helping obtain the funds necessary to build the fence at the end of Thornton Street. It has helped with the appearance and some safety issues in our area. On June 14th, we'll be hosting a neighborhood block party and dedication of the fence between the hours of noon and 3 p.m., and we would like to invite you to attend the celebration.
That's very kind, and thank you for that message. And
I'll send you out with this.
Thank you. I was going to say, I just didn't have my mark. Parker with me, and if other neighborhoods looking for fencing, maybe we could put in those big limestone balls that will.
Right.
No, I don't think we're getting into that. But thank you. That's very kind.
I've roped off the last 5 minutes of conversation here to talk about something that I think is very, very significant, and that is perhaps one of the largest public works projects in the history of the city of Bloomington. City of Bloomington Utility Service Board approved last week a $42 million plant expansion of the Monroe Water Treatment Plant to bring capacity from 24 million gallons a day to 30, and then later on down the road, 36 million gallons a day. And the decision was not unanimous from the USB, and there were those who disagreed with moving forward at this time. One of the crucial points that was being brought up by some of the dissenters was that the average amount that city ratepayers are paying versus ratepayers out in the county who are paying for wholesale rates that are sold to the county or to the town of Ellettsville is not necessarily going to be comparable. And the result could potentially be that an expansion of this type would not only enable sprawl, but could potentially even subsidize sprawl as well. Let's listen to USB board member Jeff Eamon talk a little bit about this.
I think it's irresponsible to move ahead with a decision when we are unsure of the impact on the city of Bloomington ratepayers, when we are unsure if our industrial, commercial, and institutional, IU, and wholesale customers are going to pay their fair share.
You've supported this plan, at least in general, for quite some time. Are you starting to get more worried about the particulars?
No.
No, not at all.
No, not at all. And I mean, in fact, again, I know the tendency in media will be to focus on the opposition, but
well, that does tend to result in the most enlightening discourses when we have opposing viewpoints confront each other.
No. I mean, I'm saying is that that argument ultimately didn't prevail. That the argument that prevailed was that this is in the best interest of the community, that we're protecting the community's water supply, that it's inevitable that the city is going to need high quality, safe, reliable water supply. There is an irony to me going back. If we go back a year or so, that we were all up in arms about the fact that Bert Servais, an Indianapolis developer, was going to come in and take our water. And it does seem that some are more concerned about we're more concerned about that and now don't have that same kind of concern about protecting our water supply and providing. I also just disagree that a city utility doesn't have a moral responsibility to provide water to those outside the city.
Well, the city is also mandated to with the federal grants that help to pay for these things, right?
There are some questions as to what we have to do under state law and under case law. But certainly I think that we have whether or not – and I don't want to say definitively. I tend to agree with what you're saying. I don't want to claim that and then find out that that's not the case later. But there's a reason they're set up under law the way they are set up. In terms of sprawl, it's certainly not the intent. I have taken a very conservative approach, and we've had other people who've been critical of that in terms of extending sewer and also in terms of having slowed the pace of annexation. So I mean, certainly this isn't designed to encourage sprawl. I think in terms of the rate structure, we should be taking a look at that. And I would love to see almost a graduated rate structure, much like I supported for years a graduated income tax. I think it's an issue of fairness, and I think it's a very legitimate concern. We've got contracts with other water companies that we'd have to, as we get into those, have to reconsider it. But I think it's a very valid question and something that we will be looking at.
Well,
and also conservation.
It's going to come before the council, so we'll have plenty more time to talk about it later on down the road. Mr. Mayor, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us. This has been Ask the Mayor with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan. I'm Adam Ragusa. Join us again next week. Kokomo Mayor Greg Goodnight will be our guest. Production support for Ask the Mayor comes from the South Dunn Street Project, represented by Brian Lappin Real Estate.